we are all Stellarks now. We are laser eyes and chip brains, Excel ears and third-hand communicators, wireless ghosts and data dump philosophers. Stellark futures our body. He erases and enhances, implants and repositions, designs and activates our future. Think of his key concepts. Information is radiation. The body is obsolete. The accelerating speed of technology slams into the inertia of flesh. Cyber systems spawn alternate, hybrid, and surrogate bodies. The cortex that cannot cope resorts to specialization. Physical bodies have organs. Phantom bodies are hollow. The body now performs best as its image. Stellark pierces our mind and triggers our bodies to think against time, against space, against our species being. He performs the post-biological body in advance. Liquid body, circuit body, transformed body. The body is image. The body is memory. The body is disappearance. The body is perfection. The post-biological body.
Hello, Stellarik.
Hey, I must get a sight early in the morning, I can tell you.
thank you very much for getting up early and being part of C-Theory Live. We really appreciate it. It's going to be great. And I just have, I'm going to ask you a couple of really just small questions, and then we'll put Arthur in. I just wanted to ask you if you thought that the tech has actually caught up with Stellark. And the reason I mention that is when you think of music, say mashups or whatever, you always think in terms of the technology coming first and then the innovation coming second. But with you, you've been such an innovator and always ahead of the technology. So I just wondered if you felt that the technology has finally caught up with your work.
I think there is a sort of a constant sort of interactive feedback loop between, you know, the body and its instruments and machines and for that matter, other people and social institutions and our sort of cultural positioning. So I don't really see one coming before the other. It's really a constant interplay and interactivity that's going on. On the other hand, yes, occasionally you do sort of have an idea that's difficult to actualize and a few years later the technology becomes available. So on the other hand, you know, you sometimes discover some technologies that are available that generate all sorts of new possibilities that you can elaborate. So I think it is a constant interplay and feedback loop, and it's very difficult to disconnect one from the other.
Oh, that's great.
And give one priority or...
Right, right. Well, thank you. That's great. The other question is just, I love the idea that you're collaborating with Nina, and I wondered if you would talk a bit about the Blender project and also if you intend to do other collaborations in the near future.
Well, you know, the intention was not necessarily to initiate a series of collaborations with others. I think it's always much more difficult artistically to do this. I think I've always had assistance from technical people, scientists, medical practitioners. But in the case of the Blender project, it was a kind of a unique situation for me where in utilizing Nina's interest and expertise in pro-sector work, in dissection and anatomy, and in trying to sort of ascertain what might be possible with these particular collaborations. Yeah, we came up with a performance that really involved subtracting from each other's bodies physically rather than, you know, adding to each other. We subtracted from each other And then, of course, building the, or engineering the installation that became the technological host for this biomaterial from Nina's limbs and my torso, was a major part of the visualization and actualization of the idea.
Well, do you think you'll be doing other collaborations together or not?
Well, I think the ideas come first, and perhaps another collaboration will be possible, but it's not, the collaboration isn't really the issue in this, so much as, again, the availability of, in this case, a body in addition to my own that was willing to undergo a, you know, a fairly difficult procedure, and you know, with a sort of a like-mindedness to proceed with it and to actualize it.
Well, I think it was a wonderful project, and I do hope that you will collaborate. Oh, whatever you want to call it. Thank you so much. I'll turn you over to Arthur.
Thanks, Mary Louise.
You know, as a woman, I just had to ask that question, especially since Arthur and I have been collaborators for so many years, that it really interests me.
Yes, and I think it's, actually, I've always admired how writers can collaborate. I mean, to me, it's a very difficult sort of process, especially when you're dealing with ideas in text. And I mean, of course, one can say, "Oh, okay, you do the research, I do the writing," but it's not as simple as that. And having a kind of like-mindedness to collaborate, I think, is a it's fairly unique. It doesn't happen often with writers and philosophers and theorists in particular.
Hey, Stellar.
Hey.
Hey, can I just go back for a second to Mary Louise's first question?
And, yes.
Yeah, you know, just like, she let you off too easy, I think, really. She was just too nice.
And this is where the bruising comes in, right?
The heavies are coming in now, for sure. The reason I think she left you off, well, let me just ask, because she was asking you about whether technology has actually caught up to you and paying you a great compliment, saying that usually, you know, you get technological innovations and theorists and writers about technology try to catch up to the tech. As an artist, you, in fact, have always been ahead of technology. Going, you know, preparing for this interview, and back through your entire artistic corpus, as much as what I can see, I thought, wow, this is incredible. At every stage, you have anticipated major tectonic shifts in the movement of technology itself. And I think Mary Louise asked that question because when you go back to a whole series of other works that you did after your suspension pieces, when you did the virtual body pieces. So you have the third arm, the virtual body augmented hearing pieces, the StimBod piece with the StimBod software, where you really try to develop a materiality of practice for what would be the hollowed out body, which is hardened and dehydrated, and really begin to open up this liminal space between the illusion of embedded bodies on the one hand and, you know, as you quote Julia Kristeva saying, the body as process on the other hand. You, in fact, have just brilliantly worked it out in your artistic performance. And it just strikes me that that body, the virtual body that you articulated so brilliantly in theory, has now been, in fact, enacted by technology itself. And I'll just give you practical technologies. This technology of iChats and iPods, RSS feeds, or, you know, massive online role-playing games, which are basically, strike me at a mental level, and activate, you know, in terms of activating the electronic body, are really like StimBod bodies itself. So in that sense, do you think technology has caught up to you? That's the heavies.
Well, probably done more than catch up with me, but I guess the way that one positions oneself in these projects and performances, and in trying to describe how the suspension events were done, in fact, I came up with the word indifference. In other words, positioning yourself, positioning the body, and performing with indifference, meaning as opposed to expectation. In other words, allowing things to unfold. If you do things with expectation, you tend to collapse the possibilities very quickly. If you have a posture of indifference, you allow things to unfold, to become less predictable, less scripted. And I think that's the general position within the technological terrain within which we inhabit. In other words, not to sort of become too ideological, nor to become too media-based in any one particular technology, but rather, in a sense, scanning the terrain, being alert to new possibilities, seeing if these can be aesthetically appropriated and extended, and then if this happens, you feel you can meaningfully articulate and generate alternate sorts of ideas. And I guess that's the approach that's been taken. Not so much, you know, whether, you know, you want to, you know, whether you're sort of just kind of like keeping ahead of the technology or putting a priority of the body over the machine or you know, romanticizing the possibilities of instruments, but rather, yeah, trying to be immersed in this technological terrain with an acute indifference to allow you to do things, to perform without expectation.
That is a wonderfully poetic response. It's like very much like Heidegger's notion of developing a compartment to technology. When Heidegger said that technology can go both ways at the same time, it's suicide on the one hand or possibilities for really enhancement of creative capacity on the other, he said it already depends on human beings developing an aesthetic consciousness, which is all about developing a certain comportment towards technology and drawing out the moment of uncanniness within the question of the technological itself. That strikes me as close to Wittgenstein's. Like, you began your article for C Theory with a quote from Wittgenstein's Philosophical Investigations, in which Wittgenstein talks about, let's get away from the misplaced, concreticity of like embedded consciousness and begin to think of the possibility of extruded awareness, really.
Yes, I think that Wittgenstein quote is wonderful in that it points out that, you know, thinking occurs on the paper on which you write or in the space within which you speak, and I think it does, in a sense, yeah, kind of prophesy the kind of the remote communication and extrusion of awareness that's occurring now on a daily and very common basis.
Yeah. So, Stellark, how would that apply to what I would call the three heads of Stellark? The prosthetic head, and your two new projects, the partial head and the walking head. The descriptions of each I really love. They're truly great. And well, if you could describe those, and then just maybe just reflect on how this illustrates uncanniness.
It's kind of a strange and unexpected trajectory. I mean, and one that was really totally unscripted. I've never really been interested so much in the notion of portraiture, but in one way, these new projects deal with, you know, kind of portraits of the artist, the prosthetic head as a kind of a rudimentary AI agent that has a database that has real-time lip syncing, speech synthesis, and, you know, has conversational strategy so that if you interrogate the head, it responds to you in a fairly successful way. In other words, I see the prosthetic head as a conversational system, you know, rather than an artificial intelligence,
yeah.
One that coupled with a human body enables the possibility of interesting responses and exchanges and facial interplays. But in sort of being, in a sense, wary of the problems of a generic and computer-modeled AI agent, the decision was made to produce a sort of a digital skin based on my own and to wrap it around the 3,000 polygon mesh that was the prosthetic head and give it, you know, somewhat a likeness of the artist. And in doing so, in a sense, you imbue it with a kind of rudimentary personality that's based on the looks and the expectations of this thing looking like the artist.
Yeah.
Now, the prosthetic head has sort of spawned two new projects, one called the partial head and the other called the walking head. And whereas the prosthetic head is an AI agent, the partial head is a replica of the artist's face digitally transplanted over a hominid skull. So you have an image that is sort of proto-hominid but pre-human. And we're going to skin this with a layer of living cells, which will be simian monkey cells. Again, the artistic actualization of this growing partial head is within a specially engineered bioreactor incubator life support system. And so if you imagine this this head growing under a glass dome vessel, there'll be a choreography of movements and nutrients and sounds. So, for example, every 3 or 4 minutes, the nutrient level will sort of drop, clearly revealing the growing face, and then it will fill up again. So it'll be a sort of an ebb and flow and circulatory system of nutrients. The head is actually also on a rotating turntable, so the head is slowly rotating. So again, I see this, even though it's an installation-based work, it has these performative elements in it, and so from you know, a computer-generated artificial intelligence now to a partially living entity that, you know, speaks about evolution, speaks about the human. Now, the walking head is...
Can I interrupt just for 1 second?
So
would this be like the techno room for the primitive face?
Well, I guess one could describe it as that. Just as Blender was an installation, a technological machine,
yeah.
You know, a fairly simple one in a sense, this will be a more complex biological environment where, of course, we're keeping the temperature around 37 degrees centigrade. We're bubbling carbon dioxide to stabilize the pH levels in the nutrient.
Yeah.
The face is slowly rotating, the nutrient levels are circulating and ebbing and flowing. So with the with the partial head, it'll be a more sophisticated engineering. But yes, it is a kind of a host for a disembodied proto hominid pre-human head.
Yeah, our future is a good word, actually. It sounds very rosy. So, but when I read your description and from your eloquent account now, Stoic, it really struck me that this was almost in some ways, and probably unconsciously, was a continuation of the suspension events. This time it's the pre-hominid face, which is suspended in the liquid nutrient base, which is being provided, suggesting simian DNA. And I was wondering where the hooks are in this case. Are the hooks in the
where
audience?
The
hooks are. The hooks as in, and I was wondering, are the hooks perhaps in the audience?
Well, I think it continues an obsession with skin, with the idea of skin as an interface, perhaps now a wholly inadequate one. Yeah. Perhaps technology is more the membrane of our existence, but certainly skin, in a sense, is a metaphor for our interface with the world. And the idea that here it can be, it's no longer a life support system or for the body, as with the suspended body, but rather here you have a skin that is sculpted, that is molded, that is partially living in separation within this technological host, which is this bioreactor incubator life support system.
Wow. So that's really nice. So that's the skin, which really begins to inscribe qualities of life into it. It begins to have almost an embodied subjectivity of its own.
Well, I think skin becomes not only a surface of interface, but also, in a sense, a screen. I mean, we look at the face, we project onto it just as much as it extrudes its own sense of presence.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there is also a Wittgensteinian element, you know, in using a face. Yeah. But you know that reference with Wittgenstein.
Yeah, I do. But it's also very... Like the curator who wrote a really nice piece about Blender. That was a really poetic write-up of your work and Nina's work. This auto-vivisectioning of the body. Said that for him aesthetically, it had real references to Duchamp and found objects. In this case, the found objects were in recombinant form.
Well, I think... the Blender body is, yes, it's no longer a body that is, a body of organs, but rather, as you've alluded to before in your writing, a kind of a liquid body, and it's a body blended from biomaterials, from parts of two different people. So this biomaterial is in a sense extracted, relocated, and reinvested with alternatives of an aesthetic.
Oh, that's really nice. It's a good description. And the third head to complete the trilogy.
Well,
this is very Trinitarian, you know, really.
Well, there may be more, but at the moment, the walking head is the is the most recent project, and the idea here is, in a sense, an actual virtual interface. In other words, if you imagine a six-legged walking robot, it's a relatively small one. It's about 2 meters in diameter. Yeah. Its leg span is about 2 meters in diameter, and it's about a meter high. And mounted on top of this six-legged walking mechanism is an LCD, vertically mounted, which images a human head. Now, this is just a generic head. It doesn't look like the artist, but it's a human head. So you have this kind of chimeric visual combination of virtual head and insect-like machine mechanism, and we're mapping mechanical movements to facial expressions and facial sounds. So the head will, in a sense, respond to the walking mode from the library of program movements that the machine elaborates. Ordinarily, the robot is going to be seated in the gallery space. In fact, it'll be on a low, round, elevated platform. And when you walk into the space, the robot will eventually detect you with its sonar system. Once the robot is alerted that someone is in the room, the robot will stand, because it's been squatting all along, it'll stand, swivel its LCD head, and then it'll do two things. It'll select a behavior that it'll perform, and it'll decide on the duration of that little performance. So it's a kind of a performative response to your presence in the gallery space, a kind of gesture of acknowledgement, I guess, of interactivity. Again, none of these projects are sophisticated in the sense that they, you know, they're not neural net systems. They don't have complicated. They don't have complicated artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
But that's, of course, not the interest in this. In a sense, it's the minimal acknowledgement, just as the glance that you're giving me now, you know, infuses me with a certain anxiety and and a certain unease. You know, so I think this walking head project will, with its subtle head movements and with its library of six-legged walking actions, will provide physical acknowledgements which will generate a certain uneasiness and anxiety with the person who's in the space.
Yeah, particularly since in your article that you wrote in C-Theory, when you had the dialogue with the prosthetic head, you were coding the prosthetic head with perversity. Well, it's sort of true. You said when the prosthetic head got forgetful or couldn't figure something out, it would start to sing. And you noticed like machinic phylums and rhythms of sound would begin to emit from the prosthetic head.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and also that you were actually...
I think the problem with the prosthetic head was initially because it was a project in which using language, you couldn't really, in a sense, fake its operation. I mean, with most artistic works, if they don't function as expected, it's kind of part of the deal. You know, it's not often critical. But if you're using language and you are constructing an agent that is supposed to respond to your queries, you know, on the one hand, it's got to sound plausible. It's got to make successful. It's got to comprehend what you're asking and so on. But on the other hand, this would generally make a somewhat uninteresting agent. And so, for example, when you know, in conversation with a prosthetic head, you know, if your questions become a little too mundane and boring, the head might say, well, yeah, I know it's a little cold outside, but do you want to hear the story about Matisse, or do you want to know about Wittgenstein and what he thought? And so, in a sense, it kind of tries to redirect and prompt more interesting conversational exchanges. Now, again, it does it in a very rudimentary way, but I think if we consider that what's most important is what happens between people rather than simplistically what happens within people. So in other words, it's within the realm of your writing that I have a special relationship with Arthur and Mary Louise Croker, that these writings might generate or prompt certain perverse behaviours on my part. like liquid bodies.
We've activated the head.
But you can see how these three projects are related, the prosthetic head, the partial head, and the walking head, but of course they're different kinds of artistic manifestations of somewhat alternate concerns, but there is a thread of connection between them.
But would the prosthetic head then be able to bicameral? I was wondering, thinking, well, why did Stellark move to the prosthetic head after the suspension events, after, you know, the amplified body and the virtualization of the body and your concerns, then the really large-scale pieces like Exoskeleton and Movatar, and then suddenly you're moving to the prosthetic head. And I thought, well, have you become really, is this an art project which is about really about split physiology and your and your concern with bicameral consciousness? And neither an inside or an outside of the question, but in fact both. You know, it's like a logic of inclusion and exclusion.
Yeah. I guess there's the pragmatic explanation, which I don't know whether I should tell you it. Well, you know, it's so difficult to freight around a six-legged walking machine that weighs 600 kilograms.
Yeah, it's true.
Whereas, you know, I can download the software for the prosthetic head into a little hard drive and carry it around with me in my pocket. So no, but seriously, that wasn't the consideration. I think it was in a sense being open to the possibilities of exploring, you know, alternate actions and alternate sorts of ideas, and the notion of, because I had constructed, for example, in I think it was 1991, a virtual arm.
Yeah.
And this virtual arm was a manipulator for a virtual task environment, which was actuated by a pair of data gloves.
Yeah.
And when I constructed this virtual arm, it was a kind of a desire to have a phantom limb experience, but without losing one of mine. So this virtual arm was seen as a kind of, an additional phantom limb. And I guess, in a sense, that's what the head is as well. It's an additional prosthesis in the realm of the phantom rather than in the realm of the physical, and one in which allows interaction coupled with other bodies. So the prosthetic head, as the title of the work indicates, is an augmentation. It is about coupling with the human body, and was not meant to be in its entirety or an isolated artificial intelligence.
Well, that's a really interesting response. But in the artistic reflections on memnotechnics, on the art of memory, forgetting is as important to memory as simply the recuperation of memory. Does a prosthetic head, is a prosthetic head capable of forgetting?
Not in that dynamic sense, nor is it really capable of making the sort of creative associations that you know we're doing all the time in terms of a, well, partly because of course you know the prosthetic head can only interact with the world when I switch it on, when I do more programming with it. At the moment we're developing a vision system for the prosthetic head. So in other words, the head will be able to have visual information about the person that it's communicating with. So for example, partway through the conversation it might have with you, it might say, oh, by the way, Arthur, I really like the red sweater you're wearing today. You know, so by having visual information about the user, it'll be a much more seductive agent. Or it might even pick up the fact that you're sort of looking agitated and nervous, and you're not really very calm. And so it would incorporate this information into its conversation with you. So of course, the more feedback loops the prosthetic head has between the world and its program, the more convincing and the better programmed it will become. These are sort of, in a sense, technical issues. It's providing, in a sense, a sensory feedback loop which is multimodal. At the moment, the head really just makes assumptions, yeah. from its textual and English grammar program, it makes certain assumptions and makes it works within a very, very limited realm of text. When we give it vision, when we give the prosthetic head an ear as well as an eye, yes, it will be able to respond in a more sophisticated and somewhat more intelligent way.
Yeah, that's a great response. So just following from that, do you think, we wrote this piece, we are all stillers now, with the sense that, in fact, the world is really within the amplified skin of Stiller, in very explicit ways. It's a comforting feeling, really. That in a culture, which in the logic of capitalism, the logic of technology, is a world of, really amplified and very realized neural networks. The body is, as you've said, is not an object of desire anymore as much as really an active object of design. It's been hollowed out, dehydrated, and sort of hardened in consumer culture. We remember ourselves best, as you've said again in your writings, through, in a kind of humiliated way, although you didn't mean humiliated, best through memories of images, and that the image repertoire is a better representation of the body than the body's memories of itself. If that is the case in some ways...
And that images have no organs and images are immortal in that sense.
Yeah, that's great. So if technologically we have achieved immortality, do you think the prosthetic head is not so much a probe as it's an after image of what's happened to most people's heads?
Well, I can't afford to cryogenically preserve my head. But
no, because as you were speaking, I thought, I know a lot of people like that, including myself.
Well, I think in a McLuhan-esque way, yeah. All of these projects and performances are probes, yeah. In that They don't necessarily foresee the outcome.
Yeah.
They're not even necessarily interested in a sense, illustrating an ideological stance.
Yeah.
But rather, in becoming probes, hopefully something interesting and unexpected is generated. And just as we should not see technology as simplistically augmenting and extending in a corporate sense, like consumer society would like us to perceive the world, but rather that technology destabilizes just as much as augments. You know, in other words, new instruments generate different kinds of information, which forces us to construct alternate paradigms of the world. And of course, in another more hysterical way, with Virilio's idea that with every new technology, there's a new kind of accident.
Yeah.
I think these are interesting things to take note of in our relationship with technology.
Yeah. So do you think that a series like the thinking of Virilio's accident, and Virilio also said that technology acts like a parasite. It performs like a, you know, begins to parasite passing human flesh by literally drilling itself down into flesh in terms of a metabolic logic. For example, the U.S. military likes that so much, it's instead said our next stage for, you know, DARPA events is going to be new experiments and how can we have total spectrum domination in the area of metabolism itself. I thought, well, that's interesting. That's Virilio, that Stellark's work is really probes of that kind of strategy of control in some ways. Now, that's not the question I wanted to ask, though. The question I want to ask. That was a little.
You almost prompted an abusive response from
me. That's good. Well, abuse me. McLuhan said that technology performs radical psychic surgery on the human sensorium. And he says, what are you going to say to human beings who stick their head in the buzzsaw of technology, the invisible teeth of technology, and call the whole thing freedom? I thought that was always a pretty interesting comment about the human condition. And then Virilio says every technology is born with an accident in mind, an uncanny accident. McLuhan's aesthetic strategy was ablation, the medical practice of ablation. He said you flip inside out. The turtle is wounded on the inside, so it puts its hard, it turns its hard shell inside, puts the soft part outside that's wounded, and it seeks, in fact, some way to find cures for the wound itself. So given that, would you say your strategy is medical in some ways, that the prosthetic head is a strategy of ablation, a strategy of studying that which is most wounded and capable of being wounded in when an age when stimbot technology becomes an everyday living reality?
I guess coming back to a comment about issues of control and medical and military interventions with the body, I think we're sort of in a sense, entering an area of experience that does challenge our notions of the body as a kind of self-contained, free agent. In other words, in an increasingly more complex technological terrain, the issue of who is in control becomes increasingly meaningless, I think, because with sophisticated interactive loops between bodies and between bodies and machines, what's interesting is the complexity of that interaction rather than the control of any part of it. Of course, we do have overlapping eras of ideologies, and I think issues of medical, military, interventions in controlling the body are now overlapping with the same sorts of technologies, allowing us possibilities of extrusion and possibilities of fluidity and liquid presence that were not the case in a kind of retro Big Brother controlled society. So I think the goalposts are shifted. If there was ever a Big Brother attempt at political and personal control, I think this becomes now a lot messier and a lot more problematic, because consumer society inadvertently provides the instruments within which we can now counteract that and which we can generate all sorts of aesthetic probes that will lead us in different directions. I mean, virtual reality systems, the internet, were two key military technologies that now are used for other sorts of reasons by a multiplicity of people whose agendas just can't be controlled in the retro sci-fi way.
Yeah. And then what happens when you have the resurrect in response to, the language of power trying to itself parasite technology? You, instead of the disappearance of the body, strikes me that the beginning moments of the 21st century are really characterized by this incredible resurgence of the body. And I think just literally in the media scape, hostage bodies, suicide bodies, the bodies of the tortured, the bodies of pleasure, the world is just a resurrection effect of the reappearance of the body again.
Yeah, it's kind of, noted in my sort of interaction with the piercing community and the body modification community that on the one hand you could see piercing and body modification as a kind of extreme action to re-experience the physicality of the body, to in a sense reassert the body as an important component. But on the other hand, the piercing of the body, the modification of the body, could also be seen perhaps as the beginnings of this mixing of metal with meat, a cyborgian sort of impulse. So on the one hand, it can be seen as a sort of a retro reaffirming of the physicality of the body. On the other hand, it can also be seen as the beginning of the erasure of the biological body as such, that what we're now constructing is extended operational systems that are, in a sense, a combination of bodies, machines, and institutions. So, in other words, to think of a biological body as the only sort of operational entity is just no longer the case. It really never has been, of course.
Yeah, and there's one term missing on this, though, right? Which is, what about the reappearance of very virulent notions of vengeful gods? Is it possible? I'm just asking the question in terms of, preparing the body for extruded awareness, which you've done so brilliantly, and really just sensitively thinking of the, in terms of performance art, thinking of the liminal zone, and trying to make visible the notion of the whole adult body and the phantom body and the interface between bodies and technology in suspension events, in your virtual body, a whole series of pieces, in your large-scale performance pieces like Exoskeleton and Movatar, And now with the prosthetic head and the walking head and the partial head, what happens to, what does the reappearance in very virulent forms of religion, sometimes in consonance with the language of technology and sometimes in fundamentalist opposition to it, would it begin to change your artistic strategy? I'm not asking this question in a good way, but I'm just really been really thinking through the question of religion and technology once more.
Yeah, well, I think what technology does in a sort of a simple way is that it certainly does provide us with powerful tools of illustration of any sort of ideology. In other words, we can assert religion or political ideals now in much more powerful ways. Having said that, I think what's more interesting rather is that with the increasing use of the internet in exchanging images and sounds, but now coupled with the proliferation of haptic devices embedded and connected to the internet, we're going to be able to generate increasingly more potent and powerful phantom presences and phantom extrusions of the body. And it's the interaction of phantoms that perhaps becomes the more interesting realm of operation and exchange. In other words, given the fact that the body is somewhat ponderous, is somewhat has a very short longevity, is susceptible to virulent bacteria, microorganisms. Might it be possible to generate phantom presences or phantom bodies that can perform with much faster metabolic speeds with more remote locations without the difficulties, the problems, the vulnerabilities of a ponderous body? Now, of course, this doesn't necessarily mean that the body in itself is erased. In a sense, the body becomes the underpinnings for these phantom presences, and of course without them, phantoms would probably not be able to function effectively. So it's this idea of prosthetic phantoms.
So if I understand you correctly, the prosthetic head of Jesus will suffer none of these deficiencies.
Well, I think you're much more versed in religion than I am, but
of a certain order. Hey, Stellar, this is really yeah, it's just really trip from all of us in Canada. This is truly wonderful.
Oh, thank you for initiating this link up, and perhaps we can do it on a more regular basis.
I think it would be truly wonderful, because this will launch our new, completely new innovation in C-theory, which is C-theory Live.